The Digital Lifestyle.com presents the Media Centre Show, Show 155, Thursday, 8th of May, 2008. Show with techradar.com. I'm Ian Dixon, and don't forget to check out techradar.com. A link for them in the show notes. Thanks to them for sponsoring the show, and you should check out the site. It's a great site. And a lovely spring day here in Manchester today, and I've got a great show for you. I'm going to be talking with Largo Tech about their home automation solutions, and they take the sort of software based approach as opposed to bespoke hardware. That's a nice integrated system, so if you're interested in home automation, you'll enjoy this interview. I also have email, news items, and a sneak preview on how to win the HP HDX Dragon Entertainment PC system that will be given away, along with the other sites giving away Dragon PCs. So more on that later. So I'm going to go dive straight into the email, and this is from Mark Williamson. Hi Ian, missed the podcast while you're away. Good to have you back. I was listening to your interview on IntelliRemote, and it reminded me of something that I was trying to do a while back but could not find any software to do it. I use a radio frequency remote as my media center, and amplifier are in a closed cabinet for wife approval. Therefore, I'm unable to control the amplifier with IR unless I buy an IR repeater. The media center has two IR blaster outputs for controlling set-top boxes, but as I don't use these, I wanted to use them to control the amplifier. The idea was to have a Vista Media Center plugin that would enable me to control the amplifier, like surround sound settings, etc. Also, with macros, when I switch the Media Center off, a command could be sent to turn the amplifier off. Are you aware of anything on this? Keep up the good work. And it's a PS, do you know of any applications that enable IR blasters to be used? So, interesting email that, thanks for that, Mark. I don't know of any applications that could do that, but it would be a great way to use the IR blaster if you're not using them for something else. For example, I don't use it. I've got a DVB-T card in my media center PC, so those are IR blasters aren't used. And if you control another IR device other than a set-top box, like a receiver, that would be a nice way of working. So it'd be interesting to hear if anybody knows about that. And if you do, let me know, and I'll read an update on the show. A great idea, that, Mark. Now to an email from Declan, who emailed in a couple of weeks ago. Hi, another question. Other than the one remote, are there any sideshow devices? I'm looking for a picture frame, and the iMate didn't get great reviews. I would like to also try out the M-Control gadget, as I just bought and installed version 2.1. If you haven't already looked at it, you should check it out, as the UI is much friendlier and functionality is great. And no, I'm not under commission. Declan. Thanks for the email, Declan. I've got an iMate sideshow photo frame, and I find it pretty good, actually. One thing you can't do with these things, certainly with mine, is you can't interact with the sideshow, so it's read-only. So it's great for something like news headlines from the BBC, which give a descriptive sort of headline in the RSS feed, and it actually just picks the top one off the feed. So as new headlines come, it just updates that. But you can't then interact with it, so you can't read more, or you can't scroll between the different headlines. So it's good for, like I said, for news headlines, but obviously no good for controlling something like M-Control, as you can't actually get at the data. As a photo frame, it's pretty good, actually, and apart from it locking up every now and again, I'm pretty happy with it. It's using wireless and everything else. I think I've talked about it on the show before, anyway. But I'm not aware of anything else that allows you to interact with it. So having something like that you could then wall mount and use it as a remote control service would be pretty good, actually. So again, anybody knows any different, let me know, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Now an email from Darren. Hi Ian, listen to your podcast regularly and appreciate the informative information you provide. You always mention how you like getting emails, so apologies in advance for the length of this one. I recently acquired two 15-inch LCD screens with touch overlays. Price was insignificant, so I thought I'd purchase these with a view in integrating into our home MediaSense setup. My vision for these screens was to run multiple clone displays around the house, running off our main media PC, being able to control and ship around the house the content onto the main from the main screen. The main screen is on this PC is 80cm wide, running 1360x768 via VGA. The 15-inch LCDs will only go up to 1024x768. I'd like to control music selection and perhaps some TV being displayed. Audio can already be switched to multiple locations via a very simple switching box on my receiver. The media PC is currently has an onboard NVIDIA GeForce 6150 SE and is not being used, and also has an NVIDIA GeForce 8500 GT Silent. Could you give me your thoughts on how you'd be able to integrate these into my setup and any experience you come across with touchscreen integration? I have seen photos already of some classic setups and wondered how they implemented. Regards, Darren. Thanks for your email, Darren. The first thing you would notice, you can't clone the screen because you can't match the screen resolutions up. There are some other things you could do with it. You can have them as additional screens, but as people have tried before, with one of the limitations of Media Center and the fact it's based around DirectX for the displays, when you go full screen, it locks the mouse so into the screen that's got Media Center on, so you may have an issue with that. One thing you could possibly use them for is some kind of remote control software, maybe like the Nivius or something, maybe like Largotech that we're going to be talking about later. The trick there though is how you're going to, you know, handle these extra displays, and it's a way I can think of is having them as extra monitors, and then having them as extra monitors and then using some control software on them. But I'm pretty sure you'll have this issue with this, with the mouse being locked to the main Media Center system. So really looking for any listeners again to come up with some solutions on that one. Email ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Please keep the emails coming in and I'll read them out. Don't forget, you can for email of the week, and this week that's going to go to Mark, and Mark gets a copy of Big Screen Headlines 2.0, and you can get a trial version of it at Big Screen Headlines 2 from bigscreenglobal.com. And if you use the checkout code or discount code Digital Deal, you'll get a special discount on their products. So good stuff there as well, so check that out. Right, so now to a couple of news items. Alexander eHome Upgrade has details about a new plugin for Media Center users that use Shoutcast. It's a Media Center markup application for controlling the internet radio on Shoutcast. So if you're a Shoutcast user, you should check out that. Link for that in the show notes and details on eHome Upgrade. It looks like Brian Binner at MyMovies is planning to open up the back-end services of MyMovies for additional client applications such as DVD Library and Windows Media Center and other applications like Media Portal. So currently, to use the back-end database that MyMovies has, you've got to use the MyMovies client, and this is being, looks like it's being separated out so you can have more than one movie client, which I think is good because it'll all help maintaining the data. So have a look at that link in the show notes. If you're a developer, you could probably look at integrating that data as well, so check that out. Something that cropped up in the forums that I talked about over the weekend was power settings in Media Center and how you manage those. I have mine on 24/7. Some people use sleep mode and some people don't. I kind of just leave my machine with the display switched off and it chugs away all the time. Whereas the tablet PC I'm using, I do use sleep mode and hibernate on that all the time and never shut them down, and obviously I don't leave it on all the time. So I wonder whether there's any issues using sleep mode and hibernate. And there were some great comments on the blog about different things that people were using. Some were suggesting using sleep mode as in with the extender it fires up the Media Center and it takes sort of 10-15 seconds and you're up and running, so sleep mode is well worth doing. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that. You can post your thoughts on the forum or on the blog post, link for that in the show notes, or just send me an email. Let me know how you manage your power settings. Something else I noticed today is, or yesterday, when I fired up my Zune software, it prompted me to download 2.5. with a new version and update the firmware on Zune as well. So you may have seen that already. It looks like the social elements have got a good update, as well as the client software. I noticed things, particularly for Media Center users, one of the issues I had with Recorded TV is it would only ever show up the program subtitle. So if you had a show, say The Office, and then the subtitle was The Convict, in Zune software it would just show The Convict. So you wouldn't necessarily know which series it belongs to. Whereas I've noticed on the Zune software that's been fixed, and they've got the title and the subtitle as well. So that's nice. And there's quite a lot of other changes, like I mentioned about the social elements and video download service, which looks pretty good. So you can buy episodes of things like The Office, The American Office. There's Battlestar Galactica and other stuff. Now, I've not tried these because I haven't got a Zune credit account, because I'm over here in the UK and we can't get it yet. But it'd be interesting to hear what any of the listeners have managed to get on with that. I still, for me, even if I could, I'm not sure I would anyway, because I don't want, if I download an episode of a TV show, although yes, I might like to watch it on my Zune, I would want to watch it on a Media Center machine. So for me, the ideal way would be for the TV show to download, and then I can say, okay, watch this on my Xbox, watch this on Media Center, or watch this on my Zune, and on the DRM is handled properly around that. So that's what it needs to be, really, I think, for an ideal service. But ZuneThoughts.com is a place to go and have a look for more details on the changes on Zune software. Now to an update on the 31 Days of the Dragon competition, which you may have seen run on the blog, and I think I mentioned last week as well. So this is, I'm actually giving away this laptop along with 30 other sites, and we're giving away one a day, and it's already started. And to win, I'm going to be posting details how to enter the competition on Friday, May 9th. And then you've got till the following Friday to get your entry in, and I'm going to draw a winner at random on Ustream. So before I go into detail, let me just tell you about the machine first. It's got a 20.1 inch tilt screen. It's a laptop, but it's no ordinary laptop. The screen is a beautiful screen, running resolution 1920 by 1200, full 1080p. It's got a lovely sound on it as well. It's got a proper subwoofer, great sound. It makes a great entertainment system. It's got a Blu-ray drive in there, so you can stick it in and make use of the high-res screen. And some of the other specs, it's got an Intel Core 2 Extreme X900, running at 2.8 gig, 64-bit Windows Vista Ultimate Edition. It's got Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, LightScribe drive, NVIDIA GeForce 8800M GTS with 512 meg graphics card. It's got a TV tuner. It's got a Media Center remote, a little one that clips lovely onto the front of a laptop. It's got a webcam, dual array mic, 500 gig drive. It's a fabulous machine, worth a lot of money. And also, I'm going to be giving away a whole bunch of software and DVD titles as well, Blu-ray titles to give, including that as well. So it's going to be a fantastic package. And it's a great machine. It's a home entertainment system. It's not really a laptop, but it is portable. You can move it around. But I would certainly, it would certainly make a great machine for the home. And it's a lovely finish as well. So if you want to have a look at the device, I've done an unboxing video, which I'll include a link in the show notes. You can actually have a look at how big this machine is, especially when you compare it next to my little tablet PC. But like I said, it's a lovely machine. Check out the video. So to win this, like I said, my competition starts May 9th, runs till the following Friday. And to win, I'm actually going to post details May 9th somewhere in the community forums. Now what I'm going to do, you listeners get a heads up first. So I'm going to be posting this, and I'm actually going to post it in the Media Center community forum. So you can go and have a look there on May 9th, and you'll get all the details there. For just readers who are not listeners to the show, I'm not going to tell them where it is, and they'll have to have a hunt for it. And I'm going to post some questions on there. You can email the answer to dragon@thedigitallifestyle.com. Make sure you include your town and country. And then on May 16th, I'm going to draw the winner out at random. Somebody answers all the questions right, and I'm going to draw the winner out on probably on Ustream or on Yahoo Live. So have a look at the blog May 9th and you'll see the details, and go to the community forum and you'll get the actual questions in there. So good luck, and I really hope that one of you guys win it. And like I said, other sites are giving them away as well, so check out the link in the show notes. There's 30 other sites that are giving these things away. Fantastic set of prizes. So before we go to interview, I just want to mention hello to you all following me on Twitter. And I follow you, I've been following you all back. And if you've not made a jump to go onto Twitter yet, sign up, get a free account. And if you look for me, IS Dixon, you can follow me, I'll follow you back. It's a great way of keeping in touch with the community, so I do like that. If you're already on Twitter, you can add me, IS Dixon. You can follow me on the blog as well, on thedigitallifestyle.com. Right, now it's time for a message from One Voice, and I'm back with Largo Tech.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Ilya, well, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be there.
And we're talking Largo Tech today, and it's a name that sort of cropped up to me in connection with Niveus a few months ago, actually, and we sort of agreed to get on the show. So you've got a lot of interesting solutions around home automation, but just so before we dive into the products, just give us a bit of background on you and Largo Tech.
Sure. Largo Tech was founded about 4 years ago by the group of former Microsoft employees. We're still based pretty close to Redmond campus, about 12 minutes from it, and about half of the company worked for Microsoft at some point. So the reason we founded Largo Tech is to address the need of the homeowners. And when we think about today's home, you walk into even very expensive multi-million dollar home and you'll see the walls cluttered with all types of keypads. There is more and more technology coming into the homes, but people have very little idea how to actually use this technology because the interfaces are so mid-20th century style. It's mainly keypads, and even adjusting your thermostat is a daunting task for most of the homeowners. So if you ask me what Largo Tech is all about without talking about any technologies, we are the simple user interface between people that live in the house and the technologies that surround them in the home.
Oh, well, that's a great idea, because like you mentioned, just like my central heating panel, when I want to go away on holiday for a length of time, it's more complicated than writing some .NET code just to try and get it to work, you know, the way I want it to do it. It'd be easier to write a program to do it. But so these things are kind of inherently fiddly and complicated, so it's great that these can be simplified around sort of home automation technology.
Yep. And especially these days when the prices for the energy goes up significantly every day, it's important to give a simple way to save money on the energy bills. And we provide very simple ways of doing that. My family is constantly using that. We leave the house to meet our friends for a couple of hours, and we just press away button on our touchscreen panel, and the lights turn off. We don't need to worry whether we turned off the lights somewhere, and the temperature adjusts, the music stops playing. So the house becomes in low energy mode.
I mean, I suppose that's important, and that's one of the kind of the advantages of home automation, that a lot of people think home automation is kind of toys for the, you know, for the boys, just you know, control things for the sake of it, but they're kind of adding that intelligence of OA modes and controlling heating and lighting and everything else does seem a good idea, and a way that I guess we're going to all have to go in the future.
Yep, and actually, if you think about home automation, there is a traditional way of thinking about that, is when you control a particular type of device. For example, from our touchscreen panels, we can control lighting, we can control climate, we can control security, irrigation, video cameras, audio-video devices, pretty much everything that you have in your home. But this is not how people live. They don't want to control one particular device. And with that, we have two, I would say, horizontal programs that work across different systems. One called modes, and I gave you the example of the mode with the away button. And mode basically is state of your home throughout lots of different systems. So you can capture this state under one button, and you can invoke this state, and it's very easy to go to bed and press good night button, and everything turns to the night state of your home. You wake up in the morning, you press good morning button, and everything comes back to life. But of course, people sometimes don't want to push even one button. And that's where rules application comes in. And it's basically the way to automate things, to say, if this happens and this happens or this happens, do this. And do this can be invoke the mode, change temperature program, turn some light on or off if you want to, and even send the message to your cell phone.
Right, so this is kind of, so you get your different modes, and then you can have different events that can trigger that, so like you said, temperature or time based or whatever you need it to be.
Exactly. We added the cell phone application recently, and the reason I think it's very important is because people like to save energy, they like automation, but they are not willing to sacrifice much for saving energy. And addition of the cell phone help you actually save money without sacrificing comfort. For example, you leave the house for 5 hours, go skiing, and before you come back home, you from your cell phone, you can trigger the mode and say, I'm actually on my way back home. So start heating the house. So you come back home, it's already comfortable for you.
Oh, that's excellent. That's a good idea.
Yep.
Yeah, I really like that idea.
And actually, the cell phone application is very powerful. It allows you to trigger the modes. It allows you to see the status of your lighting and temperature in the house. It even allows you to see the live video streams from your from the cameras installed in your home. And when you add to that the notification messages sent as SMS messages to your cell phone, or to multiple cell phones in your family, triggered by events like the temperature is too low or the security system has been triggered, that creates completely new level of feeling safe and secure about the what's going on in your home, whether your kids are there, you can watch them, or you're on vacations and you know that your systems work perfectly well.
That's great, being able to check in on your home automation and check in on your camera, security cameras and things to see what's going on. That's definitely something that is nice to be able to do that. You can check in and see that everything's okay and change the temperature and you're on your way back. I really like that idea. I suppose the cell phone's an ideal way of doing that.
And actually, when I go to bed, I'm using my cell phone to turn the lights off in the house, even though I'm there, because it's just so convenient. I always have cell phone right next to me. And that's probably one of the most carried device. It's the most carried device of all, something that you have with you at all times.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't really need a separate control panel or anything else as much as you would have your cell phone with you. So it's nice to have sort of both options, but the cell phone, like I said, is something you carry with you all the time.
Yep. Also, when we think about home automation, we know that there is a history of more than 20 years of the companies doing home automation. But traditionally, they had been targeting multi-million-dollar homes, custom installations. And while we respect their efforts and think they have a very important role expanding the market, but we want to target the mass market. We want to target people like you and me that don't have multi-million-dollar homes yet. And with that, there are several challenges that we saw and we had to overcome. One is price, obviously, and we brought the price down to $10,000, fully installed system, software, hardware installation, all already included in this end user price for the average home in the U.S., which is about 300 square meters. The second challenge is reliability, and that's a big one. If you look at what all home automation companies except Logitech do, they will bring you a box into your house, and they will call this box either a controller or a server or media center, but the fact still the same. It's just one box that is all your brains for home control. We don't like this idea, and when we talk to our customers, the thought of rebooting your home scares them.
Definitely.
And being in the IT industry for quite some time, I understand why, unfortunately. So our approach is there is no central box at all. Logitech is all about software, which is not surprising given our origin from Microsoft. As soon as you install our software on a hardware device and connect this device to a network, it becomes another brain of your home. And our software runs on our wall-mounted panels. It runs on UMPC, ultra-mobile PC. It runs on Media Center. It runs on regular PC. It can run even on PDA or Windows smartphone. And if you have several of these devices, you have a fully distributed system with several brains that control and your home. You can lose one of these devices, you can shut down your PC, you don't lose any functionality, you don't lose any control.
Ah, see, right, so a traditional approach might be to have a home server unit, be it Windows Home Server or 2003 or a Media Center or just a dedicated but Linux box or whatever. So this is different. So the intelligence is distributed because it's the software that's the intelligent part, and that runs on the individual machines on the network.
It runs on different devices on the network. That's correct.
Right.
It's all IP-based technology. So we bring all the legacy devices into the IP world, and then we control them.
All right. So is there a sort of a minimum requirement that you need one machine left on all the time, or is the distributed nature of it mean that you don't have to do that?
You don't need to run any PC in your home except when you store the music library on your PC. Then if you want to play this music, you need this computer, whether it's Media Center or Home Server or a PC, you need it running. But for the main control functionality, you don't need it, any PC at all. Basically, our wall-mounted HIP 100, and HIP stands for Home Intelligence Platform, HIP 100 panels, they have all the intelligence.
So you've got enough intelligence in the network so you don't have to go around with dedicated boxes. I think that's a really good idea, that.
Yep. And actually, we went even further because we are, when we look at the PC as the platform, there is one significant problem with the PC. If the PC freezes, it requires user intervention. Until you come and reboot, push the button or unplug it, nothing will happen. it will not start working by itself. So in our wall-mounted panels, we have a secondary processor that watches the health of the application and automatically restarts it if there are any problems whatsoever. So in addition to having the redundancy by using distributed system, we also have increased reliability of each device as well.
Oh, that's a good idea. So it's kind of watching over the devices so that you can, like I said, you can monitor them and restart them if necessary.
Right.
I suppose so it means that to an end user that's not into, you know, rebooting Windows machines, then that's ideal.
Yeah, exactly. And another big problem with home automation is simplicity. Our user interface is extremely simple to use. The device, the wall-mounted device, has only two buttons with no names on the buttons. Our goal was to make it as simple as using a computer mouse. If you look at the computer mouse, there is no right-left names on the buttons because it's obvious. So, and these buttons, basically, one is what to do, another is where. Very similar to the mouse approach. And what to do brings you to the list of the systems you can control. When you select your system, for example, you select your lighting, you press where, you see all the lighting areas. You go to the cameras, you press where, you see all the cameras in your home. You go to music, you press where, you see all the music areas in your home. And that works through the whole system the same way. It's very intuitive. The big jump that people need to make is when we install these devices in the house, because they went from something that they're used to, like plastic light switches, to this touchscreen panel. And people are afraid of everything new, not just technology, but people are afraid of new things, period. And to ease this transition, our wall-mounted device basically fits in the standard 2-gang box. So you take off two dimmers, you put our device connected to the same electrical wires, and you can put the default application that basically shows the same dimmers that we replaced on the screen.
Right.
So it's not a big stretch to go from plastic dimmers to the dimmers that behave the same way, but they're drawn on the screen.
So then would the control unit be controlling the lights as a plastic dimmer would, through the normal wiring? There's no special protocols to dim the light in that way.
Well, our system is wireless, so we use Z-Wave technologies for lighting control, and in some cases for there is a Z-Wave thermostat, so we control them as well. Z-Wave motor controls for blinds and shades. Z-Wave is not the only radio frequency protocol, but from our perspective, the most practical and most interoperable protocol on the market today.
Right.
So you don't need to run new wires or to cut new holes in your walls. You basically replace your existing dimmers and switches with the Z-Wave dimmers and switches, and you can start controlling them.
Right, I see. So you use your existing wiring. Z-Wave is actually doing the communication between the devices. And is that how the panels then communicate with each other for this sort of distributed way that they're using Z-Wave, or they're using a kind of a PC wireless network?
Well, as I mentioned, we live in the IP world. So our panels have two radios in them. They have Wi-Fi, standard Wi-Fi, BG, and they have Z-Wave radio in them. And actually, we are using these two radios in a pretty sophisticated way. It's not that we just use Wi-Fi to talk to the broadband devices and Z-Wave to talk to narrowband devices. We actually, instead of, because Z-Wave is a mesh network, so when you send the command from one device to another device that is far away, it hops through the nodes of the network in between these these devices. So instead of doing all the hops, we send a Z-Wave to panel, then it goes over the Wi-Fi to another panel, and then Z-Wave again to the device that is near the panel.
Right.
That allows us to scale Z-Wave network to pretty much any size we need.
Right, I see. And then the software, I noticed for looking at the website that it runs on not just the panels, you mentioned the cell phone. So what kind of platforms does the software run on?
Well, the cell phone application runs on Java phones and then Windows mobile phones. Mm-hmm. That pretty much covers, I'd say, probably 95% of existing phones. And the only limitations, for example, in states, current limitation is if it's non-smartphone from Verizon Wireless, then we cannot install our application due to limitations of Verizon. But Verizon is opening up their network, so we expect this year that we'll be able to install our system on the Verizon phones as well. So the application that runs inside the house is all .NET framework, compact framework, C# managed code.
Right. Which is what I suppose what you'd expect from a company that with your origins.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And you know, it's not that we love Microsoft and hate everything not Microsoft. It's a very practical decision. Microsoft has the best development tools that shortens time to market, and that makes it. Makes lots of practical sense to use it.
I mean, something like using the .NET framework, I guess, gives you a good scale of platforms to, right down to little micro framework machines, right the way up to a full-scale Windows deployment.
Exactly. Mm. So basically, we can run the same code through the whole line of hardware devices.
Mm. And then even I suppose through the web, through ASP.NET, or perhaps in the future Silverlight.
We are currently working on the web interface that will be released, I expect, within the next couple of months. So we tested recently, and you will be able to basically go to the Safari browser of your iPhone or iPod Touch and control your home.
Excellent. I guess that's something that's going to be... That is a kind of a wow factor, isn't it? You show somebody that they can control the home through one of those type devices. It really does kind of look like the stuff of the future.
Yeah, I actually think I have the best job in the world because it's just cutting edge technologies, and I'm playing with the latest gadgets. So I'm probably one of the first people on the planet who was able to actually control home from iPod device.
that is pretty cool. That,
and yeah, it is.
And I guess then you can just once you're running out on the web, you know, if you could run it from a browser, so you could be perhaps at the office and you could then check on your home through security cameras or from wherever you are, or at the office or wherever.
Exactly, and we see four or five major scenarios. One is. You walk into your home, you have nothing in your hands, probably you just came out of the shower. And with that, you go to the wall-mounted touchscreen panel and control your home. The second scenario, you're watching TV and you have remote control in your hands. Through integration with the Windows Media Center, we give you the opportunity to control your home directly from the media center. You can invoke modes, you can see the cameras right there in the main menu of media center. Now, if you're sitting in front of your PC at home, there is a Logitech application that runs on your PC and you can control your home. If you're not in the house, then there are two scenarios. One is you walking through the street, you have your cell phone. And we have a cell phone application that allows you to see things at home and control it. If you're in the office and sitting in front of your computer, you have your browser. Again, so it's control of your home from anywhere and from any device. That's our goal.
Mm. I mean, the next question was going to be about Media Center integration, but you've mentioned that. So there is a Media Center user interface that you can use to control the network and all the devices.
Yes, there are two applications, because you don't really use the Media Center to control one particular light. But having modes in our system makes it very powerful for you, because one, when you go to the main menu of Media Center, there's a menu item that says Logitech Home. You select it, you have either modes or cameras. So you can trigger the mode, and modes are automatically synchronized through all the devices. So if you create the mode on the panel, you will see it immediately on the Media Center. Another level of integration with Media Center is we know the state of Media Center. So Media Center sends us events, and we can use rules to trigger modes. When you hit play on your remote control and Media Center starts playing your movie, we can turn off the lights, adjust the temperature, and do pretty much everything in the house that you want to be done.
That was going to be my next question about that, whether you've got that kind of two-way integration. That's exactly what you want in it. So you like you said, you're going to play your movie, you press play, you can dim the lights and like set the temperature and anything else that you want it to do. That's really good. And is that configurable by the end users, being able to kind of set up these different modes?
That's a great question, and let me describe how you do it. I'll try to use words to visualize the whole process. So basically, to create the mode, you physically walk through a home and stage it for the desired mode. Mm-hmm. You physically turn the lights on, off, dim the lights, turn music on, off, change the temperature program, and then you come to the panel and you say new mode. You specify in what areas do you want to capture the state. Let's say you say, I want to capture this in my family room and in the kitchen. And then you say, I want to, you basically select applications that you want to capture, the state of the systems that you want to capture. You say lighting, climate, and audio. So you selected new mode, family room and the kitchen, lighting, climate, area. You hit save, and this, you will get the new button that just captured the state. And you can start using this button. In order to do the integration with Media Center, it will take you probably 30 seconds to do that. You go to the rules application, you say, if the state of Media Center is playing, invoke the mode, and you just put the name of the mode that you just created, and you're done.
Excellent. So it's up to the end user then to set exactly what they want and when it gets triggered, and then they're away.
Yes.
Well, that sounds really good. And I guess then you could then just go and set a mode for when you say pause it or stop it to put the lights back on and everything else.
Yeah. Yep. And it can be different for when you pause it and when you stop it.
See, that's where the integration comes in. I think that's what always looks impressive when you see it on demos, is having that two-way interaction. So it's not just reactive from you switching a light on and off. It's actually reacting to the events and do things intelligently.
Yep, exactly.
You mentioned about audio there. Does it have a way then of moving audio around the home, or is it purely a control to say, well, you know, which a PC server will play audio?
Well, there are multiple ways to do the distributed audio in today's home. We started with support of different existing systems, like where we support the now Logitech Squeezebox. We support Rust Sound audio switch functionality. We support Niles. But we also saw the demand on the new construction market, where they have a huge problem, at least here in the United States. It's a new home. There's no homeowner yet for this home. And they want to offer a distributed audio solution for the homeowner as a part of the package. The options are basically limited to running the wires, speaker wires, to the central location, putting the audio switch in there, and then put the stack of audio-video equipment in this location and control it from some type of a keypads. This is an extremely expensive value proposition. And also, we saw the solutions, and the bundles of wires are just unbelievable. They're like 30 centimeters in diameter, and I'm not overstating that. So imagine if something goes wrong and you need to troubleshoot or repair it, and it goes through the wall, so it will be a major nightmare. So we are releasing the new distributed audio device called HIP 25. And the whole idea is that content, and when I say content, I mean audio, and control goes through one wire. All you need to do is run the Ethernet cable. You can daisy chain these devices. It's power over Ethernet, and these devices serve as both zone and source. So you can either you can connect speakers, and you can connect your audio source to any of these devices. With that, you get distributed audio solution. So you don't need to put all your equipment in one rack. You just put it where you want it to be connected to this HIP 25 devices, and because the HIP 25 devices has also IR inputs outputs, it has RS-232 connection, you can control these devices in place.
So that way, that's how you can do your distributed audio. And you mentioned about zones there, so you would be able to have different zones. And I guess then, because all the control panels are all talking to each other, you can control different zones from different panels.
Yep. Yeah, from any panel you can control any zone.
Because that's the thing, the distributed audio. So I think it's always seems to be difficult and sort of complicated to do with around zones. So that's a good way of doing it, that so that each of these devices becomes its own zone, and you can control that from anywhere else.
Right, exactly. And it's not just zone; it's also a source. So you can plug your iPod, for example, anywhere. In this HIP 25 and play it either throughout the house, or you can select where you want it to be playing.
Yeah.
Or you can plug your CD player and control it and play from it.
Right.
Or you can, and because it's IP, it's all Ethernet, you can play your music library from your computer as well.
Yeah. Because a lot of people, I guess, will have music libraries, but also having a convenience of an iPod or a Zune, or just to dock it and then have the audio routing through that, and then being able to distribute that, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
And so the way that users get the system, is it through a dealer network, or is it sort of an end user? I mean, I guess it is dealer network from this kind of technology, but how would you go about getting it?
We market to builders. We sell through the certified installers. Unfortunately, the technology is not there for do-it-yourself market. Of course, you can do a small project, like buy several dimmer switches, remote control for them, and turn the lights off when you go to bed. But when you want to integrate your audio, video, video cameras, routers, wireless dimmers and switches, thermostats, security panel, is just a lot of knowledge. So we just don't see as do-it-yourself project in the near future at all, even though we work hard to simplify the installation process for our installers. Because if you look at the simple thing, like configuring the router in the house, you look at different routers, wireless routers from different manufacturers, they all configured differently, they have different user interfaces, they have even the naming conventions are different from router to router.
Right, I see, yeah. So if you were after a full home installation, you go through a dealer, what about backporting? So you've got an existing home that's not got any special cabling. Can you then come in and add the system in at that stage?
Oh, absolutely, because it's a wireless system. It doesn't require running the wires. At most, we need the Ethernet cable in some locations, which is typically exist in today's homes. And for us, even when it's new construction, we come at the very, very late stage in the game. When everything is done, then we come and configure. So from our perspective, whether it's a new construction or retrofit, the installation is pretty much the same.
And I guess using wireless technology and those kind of things means that you don't have to then start digging big channels out in the existing floor and the wall and everything else.
Yep, exactly.
Mm. And so where's the best place to go then to get more information on this and to see the products?
www.lagotek.com, LAGOTEK. Is our website, and you will see the new demo. There is an interactive demo available on the website, and that's a great place to start to find the local dealers. We're going to participate the Home Automation Summit in Frankfurt next week with the Z-Wave Alliance. So we're looking at the opportunity to expand to Europe probably end of this year, next year. So we're looking for good technology partners, builders and installers in Europe at the moment.
Well, that's going to be my next question of that. So at the moment it's North America availability, but like you said, you're looking at Europe for next year.
Yep. And actually, even though we told ourselves, you have to start local, but repeating that doesn't help us much because we see so much demand, and we already selling in Mexico, in Canada, South Africa. So I just got requests from Asia, from Middle East. People really want this technology. This is just absolutely mandatory thing for the home. It's just the only thing that we are struggling with is people don't know that it's affordable. People don't know they can actually have this in their home.
Yeah, because it does look kind of space age and Star Trek-y, really, until you realize how simple it is.
Yes, exactly.
And I think the way that it's designed so that it's wireless and fits into existing sockets and everything does make it a more consumer friendly product than some of the other installations that do seem to want to sort of rip holes in your walls.
Yeah, and that was our goal from the very beginning. We knew that we need to bring the price down for the home automation system, and the ways to do that is. First, get rid of the additional wires and holes, so lower the cost of labor. The next thing is lower the cost of support, so we had to make it very simple and intuitive to use. Our installation for a 300-400 square meter home typically takes 2 days at most. One day is electrician replacing the dimmers and switches with wireless dimmers and switches, and the second day is configuration. Yeah, and we actually want to bring the time of configuration significantly down with the release of the new installation tool that will be wizard-based, step-by-step, do this, do this, do this. and you're done.
And I think I like the fact that it's software based. So especially as a developer, this is where the power is. You've not got special expensive custom rigs and servers and things. It's software based, and I think that's definitely the way these things are going and the way forward.
Yeah, and the best part is you're not stuck with what you got, because we can do remote updates, upgrades of your home automation system, and in most cases you can get the new feature with the new release pretty much automatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. You're not there is that not that obsolescence built into it through like there would be to a dedicated hardware device.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, many thanks for your time today. It's been fascinating talking to you, and I wasn't aware of this product, so I'm really glad that we managed to hook up and get you on the show.
Oh yeah, no, thank you so much, and it was a pleasure to talk to you. I just really enjoyed our conversation, and congratulations on moving over 150 shows.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We've got a lot. 100. This will be 150 something. So we're doing pretty well.
Yeah. And I'll be happy to talk to you on your 200th show.
I'll hold you to that then.
Okay, agreed.
Well, many thanks for your time today, and I'll include links for everything in the show notes.
Thank you so much.
So that's it for this week's show. Check out the video for the HP Dragon. Good luck with the competition. Don't forget you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook group, and blog. Check out the forums, some great information on there. And I'll see you next week. Bye.